KYW News Radio original podcasts.
Our judicial system is supposed to be politically neutral. Every trial heard by an unbiased judge who can make a fair decision. Now, everyone has their political leanings, but it seems like lately bias among some judges is becoming more and more obvious. And in certain situations at the federal level, plaintiffs are able to basically game the system to get a specific judge who will likely rule in their favor. It's called judge shopping, and Democratic politicians have claimed that Republicans have done this in several major cases recently.
There's the Mifepristone case that was just argued at the Supreme Court. There have been cases, you know, on immigration, cases on LGBT rights.
In March, a federal judicial panel issued a policy to try and stop judge shopping, but it's just guidance, not a hard and fast rule that courts have to follow.
But what we're seeing is the extreme politicization of lower federal courts is really brand new.
I'm Matt Leon, and today on KYW News Radio In Depth, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. We're digging into judge shopping with Paul Gliuzza, a law professor at Temple University. He'll explain exactly how judge shopping is possible, what this policy aimed to do, and how this all adds to Americans' lack of faith in our justice system. Let's kind of start with the concept. What is judge shopping?
Sure. So judge shopping, simply put, is the ability of a plaintiff to choose not just the court they file a case in, but the individual judge who hears that case.
And this has been going on. This is not a new concept, right?
Well, it's not new in the sense that it's been possible for a long time in lots of different types of cases. So let me give you a little bit more background. So the federal trial courts are divided into 94 different districts. Some of those districts cover an entire state, like the District of New Jersey. Some states are subdivided into multiple districts. So Pennsylvania, for example, we have the Eastern District of Pennsylvania here in Philadelphia, as well as two other districts in the state. Some of those federal judicial districts, the federal trial courts, are then further subdivided into divisions. These are largely just for administrative purposes. You know, usually we're talking about districts that are relatively large geographically, that have multiple courthouses in multiple different cities. And so there's a further sort of administrative subdivision of the judicial district. In some of those individual divisions, there is only one federal district judge who sits there, right? All cases filed within that division are assigned to that individual judge. So this has been the structure of the federal courts for a really long time. However, it's only been in the last, I'd say, 20 or 30 years that parties have started to exploit the divisional case assignment system to file cases where they can effectively choose the individual judge. This happened most notably or most frequently in patent infringement cases. It's been happening for a couple of decades. Parties choosing to file thousands of patent infringement cases a year in unusual places like Marshall, Texas, or Waco, Texas. And then more recently, it's been in the news because Republican attorneys general and sort of conservative activist groups have started filing lots of cases in single judge divisions in places like Amarillo, Texas, and Wichita Falls, Texas.
And to that point, the reason why this has garnered a lot of headlines kind of past the patent discussion is this is simply like what we got the Mifepristone case. Am I correct? Like that. And
right,
you end up
right.
with this national injunction that I think a lot of people who don't pay attention or don't have time to pay attention are like, well, why does one judge in Texas get to make this decision? Right.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So the cases I'm talking about being filed in Amarillo, Texas, and Wichita Falls, Texas, there's the Mifepristone case that you mentioned that was just argued at the Supreme Court. There have been cases, you know, on immigration, cases on LGBT rights. One of my favorite ones is the judge in the Wichita Falls, Texas, struck down the entire Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And he did that in 2018, which was 6 years after the Supreme Court had already upheld the constitutionality of that statute. So we're seeing like very extreme conservative rulings coming from a small number of judges who the plaintiffs essentially get to handpick in these cases.
It is amazing to me that this has been going on this long and kind of no one has done anything about it.
to this point, and we're going to talk about this rule that was just put forth. But I'm curious, is there a good faith pro aspect to this? Is there something, yeah, but if you dig deep, or is this simply just, nah, pretty much they're just gaming the system?
No. I mean, you know, in my view, there's not really a good counter argument here. I think the two, you know, two arguments off the top of my head that you would hear. One is every litigant forum shops, right? Republicans, Democrats, plaintiffs, defendants, like everybody's always trying to get a case into the forum that's most favorable, right? So for example, when Democratic state attorneys general were challenging policies of the Trump administration, like the Muslim ban, for instance, they were filing cases in places like Seattle, San Francisco, some in Hawaii, right? Which, you know, in general have more Democratic appointed judges than Republican appointed judges, right? But they're not choosing the individual judge in those cases, right? In all of those districts, cases are randomly assigned to more than one judge, often a relatively large number of judges. That's much different than choosing the individual judge who hears the case, right? You know what you're going to get when you file a case in Amarillo and it's assigned to Judge Kaczmarek, who spent his pre-judicial career being an anti-abortion activist. You know how he's going to rule in the abortion cases. It's much different than just sort of choosing a forum that's generally favorable because the judges might be generally inclined towards your position, but you're not guaranteed of any particular judge. On the patent side, where again, we've seen this happen a lot. You know, there's some arguments made about, you know, the expertise and specialization that's required to hear these technically complex patent cases. You know, I think that's potentially true, right? I mean, these are difficult cases, but there's also questions of like, if these cases are so difficult, do we really want the solution to be that, you know, one judge takes it upon themselves to sort of be a magnet for patent litigation, or should we create a sort of a specialized system that has broader buy-in from all sorts of different stakeholders, not just the parties who choose to file the case in Marshall, Texas or Waco, Texas?
So now let's talk about the rule I've referenced, that the federal judiciary, right? It was actually, I think, a group or a policy kind of conference within, they put forth a rule to try to prevent this, correct? Kind of dig down into what they did.
So the group, and you're right, it's called the Judicial Conference of the United States. It's a group of like 26 federal judges from all levels, trial judges, appellate judges. It's actually chaired by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts. And their sort of general responsibility is to oversee the operations of the federal courts, right? So if there's policies about like cameras in the courtroom or, you know, security measures dealing with the court, you know, travel policies for judges, like all those sorts of things, you just need to make the court system run. That's what the Judicial Conference does. The Judicial Conference also oversees the procedural rules that govern cases in the federal courts. And as part of that authority, what the Judicial Conference did on March 12th is it issued not a rule, but a policy that suggested that courts ensure that cases basically seeking to bar or mandate government action, right? So, for example, rescind the FDA's approval of mifepristone, cases like that should be assigned randomly on a district-wide basis, right? So instead of the case being, you know, if it's filed in Amarillo, Texas, it's automatically assigned to Judge Kaczmarek, right? If it were filed in Amarillo, it would be assigned to any one of the 11 judges who sit on the broader district. It's the Northern District of Texas, right? So that's what the Judicial Conference said, and it came out in response to criticisms of judge shopping. But right, the beneficiaries of that policy, namely Republican politicians, sort of immediately came out, emphasized that this is just a policy. The district courts don't have to follow it. And not surprisingly, perhaps, the Northern District of Texas's chief judge just came out with a letter late last week that said, thanks, Judicial Conference, for announcing this policy, suggesting that we randomly assign these cases on a district-wide basis, but we're not going to change anything. And so we're going to allow litigants to continue to judge shop in places like Wichita Falls and Amarillo.
Why would you put this forth as just a policy and not a rule? I mean, this kind of goes to a bigger problem I find with most of our systems within our government, is we don't force the right things on people. We kind of depend on, well, they'll do the right thing. And we keep giving people who are not operating in good faith the benefit of the doubt that they will operate in good faith, when anyone who's paid any attention knows what's going to happen. So why would this be a nudge and not a push and say, no, this is how it's supposed to work?
I mean, the reason is, I don't think the Judicial Conference believes it has the authority to tell district courts how to assign their cases, right? I think that's totally wrong, right? So as I alluded to a minute ago, the Judicial Conference has authority to develop procedural rules that govern in litigation in federal court. So this covers all sorts of things, like from how trial is conducted to how you file a motion, like any sort of procedural thing you can imagine that takes place in a court case. It's governed by these things called the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure that are promulgated by the Judicial Conference of the United States. But there's this relatively vague statute that exists that essentially says district courts can divide up cases among the judges however the court orders, right? And the Judicial Conference, if you really get into the weeds of the guidance and policy that they've issued on random judge assignment, seems to think that because of that statute, district courts have total discretion about how to assign cases however they see fit. I think that's a wrong reading of the relevant federal laws. I think the Judicial Conference would be well within its rights to say, there's a rule that requires some degree of randomization in case assignment. But, you know, I think as a legal matter, the Judicial Conference is reluctant to exercise that authority, in part because it would be so controversial and get the pushback that we're seeing by, you know, interest groups that benefit politically from the ability to pick particular judges.
Doesn't that kind of give the game away, though, that the only people squealing are the ones that benefit? Like, there's not like a cross-reference where you could say, well, it's louder on this side, but it's all the people you would expect.
Yeah, and I agree with your earlier point, right, of this, like, there's almost a naivete. And I think, like, you know, the Judicial Conference, chaired by Chief Justice Roberts, you might say that, like, they're like, look, we just need to point this out. Like, of course the district courts will change their practice. But the reality is, on the Northern District of Texas, where a lot of this job shopping and politically charged cases takes place, 10 of the 11 active judges were appointed by Republican presidents. And so they really don't have any interest in changing, you know, to the extent you think that they want, you know, politically want to achieve the outcomes that they're achieving through the litigation in Amarillo and Wichita Falls, they actually don't have any incentive to change the rules.
Is this something that legislation could fix if the Judicial Conference doesn't want to step up? Could Congress, in theory, if you had a functional Congress that once again was operating on good faith from both sides, could they address this? Or would there be push that, no, it's separation of powers, you can't do this? Like, could that happen?
Yeah, Congress absolutely could change the law, right? The lower federal courts are entirely a creation of Congress. And so Congress essentially has plenary authority to regulate the lower federal courts. So Congress could absolutely mandate some degree of randomization in case assignment by passing legislation. You know, the problem is, I think your question foreshadows, we now have one major political party that's turned into kind of like a pro-judge shopping lobby, which, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the idea, naivete is a great word you used earlier. The, well, we tell them to do the right thing, they'll do the right thing, they'll be shamed into it. Because if we've learned nothing in the last decade, it's that a lack of shame is incredibly powerful in our system. If you really don't care what the outside thinks, you can run roughshod because there are not enough internal controls really to fix it, no?
I agree. I mean, I think that's it.
We need to take a break on KYW News Radio In Depth. We will continue our conversation with Paul Gugliuzza in just a moment. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. This new year, discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda, KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on KYW News Radio In Depth, let's get back to our conversation about judge shopping with Paul Gugliuzza, professor of law at Temple University's Beasley School of Law. So where do we go from here? Are we just going to pretty much, there will just be a tisk-tisk and the districts that probably don't need this guidance will be the ones that that adhere to it, and these renegade ones will just keep doing what they want, and unless Congress steps up, this is just life?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, to be clear, there are a lot of districts similar to the Northern District of Texas where, you know, there are single judge divisions. It's like you could create a case assignment system in which judge shopping is possible, but they don't have that system, right? They sort of are out. They didn't need to be told that judge shopping is not a great thing. And so they've designed case assignment mechanisms so that judge shopping is not possible. But, you know, in many districts, we mentioned the Northern District of Texas a lot, the Southern District of Texas, also the Western District of Louisiana, and there are various other districts scattered throughout the country where it is possible to pick an individual judge that you want. You know, for the time being, it seems like, you know, Amarillo, where Judge Matthew Kaczmarek sits, is sort of the hot spot. But, you know, given the way these courts are structured to facilitate judge shopping, it could be anywhere else. We've seen this in patent cases as well. It started in the Eastern District of Texas, in Marshall, Texas, and some changes to the law moved it to the Western District of Texas in Waco, Texas. There's been some additional changes, and now patent cases are moving back to Marshall, Texas, and also to like Midland, Texas. And so, as long as the law gives the district courts discretion to set up these case assignment systems however they want, some courts will abuse that authority and create these unfair playing fields to bring cases in and give litigants the results they want.
Things like this, and then to kind of take this out further, and what we're seeing with the Supreme Court with just overturning precedent, and it really feels to me that we have reached or will soon reach this crisis where people are just going to lose all respect and, you know, thoughts of legitimacy of the federal court system. And what happens then when you're operating in a country where a good majority of people on both sides don't really have any respect for what these courts are doing?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And that's the danger here, right? Is, you know, we're seeing the it was kind of known that, you know, the Supreme Court sometimes it's politics, right? We've kind of known that for a really long time. We learned to live with it to some extent. But what we're seeing is the extreme politicization of lower federal courts is really brand new, right? To see these sort of ideological appointments like Judge Kaczmarek, like Judge Reed O'Connor in Wichita Falls, Texas, taking just the most extreme positions possible. They look like nothing but political actors who've been installed to make radical changes to the law, sometimes even too radical for the Supreme Court, right? I think if you followed the Mifepristone arguments, Judge Kaczmarek's ruling is sort of, you know, striking down the FDA approval, that is probably not going to stand. And so I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, I don't think we've been in an era where people just don't trust even the lower federal courts, right? I mean, these are, you know, not every case in the lower federal courts is about the FDA's decades-old approval of an abortion drug, right? I mean, there are contracts cases and car accident cases and antitrust cases, all sorts of other cases that don't have like really clear political valence to them. And yet we may be now putting them into a system where like nobody actually believes anything is fair. And that's really hard. Like that's really hard. It really, I don't know what happens then, but certainly not having a court system that can legitimately resolve even, you know, relatively mundane business or personal disputes is not really a recipe for social cohesion.
That's it for this episode of KYW News Radio In Depth, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. You can listen to the podcast free anytime on the Odyssey app, and you can find it wherever you listen to your favorite shows. I'm Matt Leon, and we'll have another episode out soon.